Right. So today is International Women's Day, which is rad. So that is going to be our focus. Is going to be women in the Bible and how Jesus treated women, and just to look at that. I think there's a lot of people who are off put by Christianity many times because of the feeling of how women are treated or were treated in the Bible or how they're treated in churches. And I think that there's a lot of churches that treat women very different than the way Jesus did, and have put in their culture instead of what he truly teaches on. And so people have misrepresented women many times, and have left out different parts. And there's a lot of people who believe in a lot of more hierarchy in, you know, men and women. And so we're going to look at some characters in the Bible and look at just some ways that Jesus treated women. So some interesting facts about International Women's Day. So the first National Women's Day here in the U.S. was back in 1909. Then in 1911, there was an International Women's Day, Austria, Denmark, Germany, and Switzerland. And then the United Nations started to recognize it in 1975, and then it kind of like fizzled out for a little while, but came back in 2011, so 100-year anniversary. Obama connected back to the 1911, and anyway, and then it's become more since then recognized throughout the world. So, but I mean, it's been going on for a long time, and still, it was interesting because I was looking on something popped up on Facebook and just saying like surveys about women that still people have a lot of how did it word it? It was interesting on how it worded it, but it was people's view in general. Of how, you know, how women are treated, but in women in general, and like 9 out of 10 had this negative view. So, and now I'm quoting something that I didn't read the whole article. So, but stuff is, and we do that, you know. So I'm not gonna say any more on that. But things are being stirred constantly, right? And it's something that people are coming against, right? So equality, equity, and I want to show, like, the way that Jesus treated men and women was so equal. What he preached on, what he spoke about, how he treated people was so against culture and the society at the time. He really was a revolutionary in the way that he honored women. And if we, as a church, treated women the same way Jesus did, and I'd say church as a whole, it would be a very different world. And I think what's happened is that there have been, because of battles between genders and men oppressing women in a lot of ways throughout Christian history, women have then risen up and tried to lord over men in some ways, and then it's become like this flip-flop, and then you've got these men who are weak and just kind of go to the backside. And then, so it's just, it's become this mess of people trying to become more powerful than the other group, if that makes sense. And so instead of that, there's a scripture that says, there's no Jew or Gentile, no slave or free, no man or woman. In Jesus' eyes, everyone is equal. Now we're created differently, but that's a whole different topic, right? So we're equal. And a lot of the women throughout the Bible, the roles that they were in go very against what people allow women to do in churches. I believe that women can be pastors. I believe that women can be leaders of churches. I believe that women can be prophets. And we'll look at some of those women. So, interestingly, and some of this is review for us, but I think it's good, and it may not be for everybody. So, in the genealogy for Jesus, there are 5 women represented in the genealogy, which is huge, because in genealogy, back in that time, women were not spoken of. It was just men. You know, who your father was, and that's how you were connected. And the fact that there were 5 women was already in that going against cultural norms. So I wanted to look at a few characters, ones that I knew some of them, but some of them are ones that I didn't know very well. So there were two women, Shifra and Pua. I don't know how to say that right, but this is during when the Hebrews were living in Egypt and being treated poorly. So Joseph, because of how Joseph was, the Pharaoh at the time honored Joseph and said, I'm going to protect your people, right? And Joseph became a high position in the court, right, of the king. Well, when Joseph died, the new Pharaoh, he did not honor that. He didn't know anything about Joseph, and so he treated people differently. And he said, the Israelites are now becoming way too many and too powerful. We need to control them. And so he commanded two Hebrew midwives, Shifra and Pua, to kill all the Hebrew boys when they were born. And he said, so when you go there, you know, kill the baby boys so that they can't reproduce. I know it's really bright, huh? That sun. Do you? So even though it was dangerous for their lives, they refused to do that. And instead of refusing, what they said is, you know, Hebrew women are much stronger than Egyptian women, and they have the babies before we arrive. So we couldn't do anything. And so, like, they flat out lied, you know, to the king, and they spared, like, I mean, hundreds of young boys were spared because of that. And then, I don't know if Tamar or Tamar, does anybody know how exactly to pronounce it? It's Tamar. So Tamar, she was left childless and dependent on the hospitality of her father-in-law, Judah. But he abandoned his responsibility to provide her a son to continue the family line. So she was married to one of his sons. He died, and she was given to another one. He died. She was promised to another one of his sons, and he never did that. And so he had a responsibility as her father-in-law to produce a son for her as an heir. And so, and he refused, and so she's the one that pretended she was a prostitute. She went in, she slept with her father-in-law, which I know sounds horrible, but her right was to be able to have children and to be able to be protected in that family lineage, and he had denied the rights that she had in that. And so, because of doing that, though, what she needed to do, continue the line that led to Jesus. Had she not done that, had she not stepped into that and been bold enough to do that, that would have ended the line that was going to lead to Jesus, which is really crazy. So the line leading up to Jesus has a lot of very messed up things in it. So Tamar's son, Perez, is the ancestor of the royal line of David, which is talked about in Ruth 4. Okay? Then we have Rahab. A lot of people know of Rahab, right? So the prostitute. She's also in the lineage for Jesus. She's the one who hid the spies and said that they were not there. She believed in God because she knew that things that were happening, other kingdoms that were falling, she believed, even though it just other people did not believe, right? And so her family was spared because she had faith in God, right? She was not a believer. She was not a Christian. She was not Jewish. She was
she was in Jericho.
In Jericho, so I don't know exactly what line. So for her, so that somebody that was known as a prostitute to be in Jesus' line is powerful. She was, through her line of work, providing for her family. There was also something that they mentioned, that she had these cords that were these royal cords, and so there was a connection with that as well, and I didn't look more into that. But anyway, just highlighting some of these women before we get into some of the topics with Jesus. Then there was a woman, Jehosheba, and this says, when the queen mother Athaliah discovered her son, King Ahaziah, dead, she executed the entire royal family to secure her position as a queen of Judah. But the king's sister, Jehosheba, took her infant nephew, the prince Joash, to safety, and he became the only survivor of the massacre. 7 years later, he was put on the throne. Because of Jehosheba's bravery in defying her aunt, the royal line of David was preserved. So another way that, like, wow. if he had been killed, if she didn't stand up, risk her life for that, and be bold and courageous, the line of David would have been ended. crazy. And that would have happened twice. Wow. And both of them happened by women being bold and strong and courageous, right? So the fact that these stories are in here are not just by accident. Most historians in the past would often be writing about men and the powerful acts that they did. So the fact that women's stories are being put in general, that's powerful. And so she was another one that preserved the line of David. Then there was Huldah, and this is during, so after the priest Hilkiah discovered a book of the law during renovations at Solomon's temple, Huldah declared prophetically that the book they found was authentic word of the Lord. And she was known at that time. She was the only female prophet in the Book of Kings. We also have other female prophets. Miriam was a prophet, a prophetess, or prophet, however you want to say it. Deborah as well. And so there are three. I only knew of Deborah. I had forgotten that Miriam was also considered a prophet. And then Huldah, and I wasn't aware of that. And in the New Testament, it talks about positions for people to have. And being a prophet was one of the highest positions, like to have, right? And so if that is allowed for women, why are the other ones not, right? And so many people say, well, women can't be pastors, and yet there are prophets throughout the Bible that help the people. There are women who had house churches and led house churches, and so people have continued to twist things. Organizations that I've been connected with, the way that they believe that women should not pastor, that women should only teach as long as they're in a protective, you know, covering by a man. And so a lot of these beliefs that have continued to be held onto that I believe are not biblical and do not respect what women actually bring. So another one, Lydia. So Lydia was one of the first converts to Christianity. She's talked about in Acts. She's described as a worshiper of God. She's also a businesswoman with a family. And so she created purple cloth, and she was very wealthy, and she moved away from that to be able to help missionaries, to help Paul, and it was believed that she had a house church in her home as well during that time. And so some of the women moved toward Jesus because they were oppressed, and it was a way to feel liberated. Like, that's some people's stories. Lydia didn't need that. She was a business owner. Like, she was wealthy, she was doing well, she was drawn to it because she knew that it was truth, right? And so sometimes people are like, will say that women in general, because of the way Jesus was, that's why they felt liberated, so that's what drew them there. Well, no, she was drawn out of relationship. She was already a powerful person in her community and in her society, and she had a high standing. So it wasn't that she was looking for something more and to be elevated. She knew and she saw truth in that. So then there's Priscilla. So Priscilla, also known as Prisca, I don't know, was a Jewish woman from Rome who converted to Christianity. Some may point out that she is always mentioned with her husband and never on her own. However, they are always shown as equals in Christ, and the two of them together are remembered as leaders of the early church. Not him, but both of them together. They're both recognized as leaders for the early church. Phoebe was a deacon who served with the overseers and elders of the church. She supported Paul and many others in the work. In Romans 16, it says, I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a deacon of the church at Centrea. I don't know how to say that. So that you may welcome her in the Lord as is fitting for the saints, and help her in whatever she may require from you, for she has been a benefactor of many and of myself as well. And yet there's many churches that will not allow women to be deacons, women to be pastors, women to be leaders. You know, or you can be a leader, but you're in charge of children's ministry, you know, or you can lead worship, but you can't be the worship pastor. You need to be under a man, and he's the worship pastor, but you can lead worship as long as you're covered by him. These just weird things that we shift and we change. And I think we need to be willing to have those conversations with people, because a lot of people, they see that, and it's very off-putting, right, for women. It's very, if I was, it would be off-putting for me, so I can only imagine being a woman, how it's often spoken of, and how the gender gap, you know, I mean, the world is big as well, but also in the church, where that's where we should have more of a balance, because that's where, like, true freedom should be found. Then, this is interesting to think about. So, when Jesus came back to life, the first to see him were women. And in this time period, women were never allowed to be witnesses to historical events. Their accounts were not written down. It was only if a man said something happened, then you knew that it happened, but not women. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that they put women's accounts in there, and they're the first ones to see, also says, like, hey, if they actually wanted people to just believe them and just to convince somebody of a lie, they would have said that it was men. Mm-hmm. Right? So the fact that they said it was women proves more that Jesus came back to life, because to honor that and respect that, it had to be true, because they weren't going to do it for their own benefit, because people weren't going to believe them because it was women who saw them. So, I mean, crazy. And I've heard people, you know, over the years of just saying, like, how oppressive, you know, the Bible is to women. But there are these glimpses of these women being elevated and respected and honored, right? As cultures that were taking place during this time, yeah, women were oppressed. And that has been something that's been happening throughout history. But that's not God. That's the culture and society that these stories were taking place in. The way that Jesus was with women when he was alive went fully in the face of, like, what people believed in at that time, right? So I want to look at a few of those. So these are not my own thoughts. So I just started Googling, you know, like, I knew some of the stories, but I'm like, hey, I'm going to find some ideas. Other people have spent more time researching these things. So, but it's things that I agree with. That's why I have this packet here, because I did not create this. These are not my words. These are other people's that I have highlighted with red to bring out truth that other people have found. So one of the things, that Jesus noticed women was important. So during the time that Jesus was alive, many women, and some women would rise above that, right? And so we had Lydia, who became a businesswoman. But a lot of them, the view was, you raise children, you bear children, you keep the house, you know, and you stay at home. And if you go out, you go shopping, you're not recognized by men around in the society. And to go up and talk to a woman wasn't smiled upon, right? And so to have friendships with women wasn't smiled upon. And also to have disciples, women that were following you to learn from you, that did not happen. So in the Jewish culture, when you had somebody that was a rabbi, which Jesus was, a teacher, it was men who followed. Men were allowed to learn. Men were allowed to study. And yet Jesus had women that were following him, that went wherever he went, that they sat with him, they learned from him, and they were apart. They were also, interestingly, the disciples that were walking with Jesus, they were supported by these women who were following them. And it says in Scripture that they are the ones, they were like benefactors for these men who are out there not able to work, and these women were the ones supporting them and being able to provide for the things that they needed. So, like, they made it possible, and yet they were also learning, like, with that, which I think is amazing. So, and I know we talk, you know, a lot of people talk about the Samaritan woman at the well. That was huge because, first of all, Jews and Samaritans, Gentiles, wouldn't talk to each other. So she was surprised just in the fact that, like, a Jewish person was talking to her. Like, Jews hated Samaritans, and Samaritans hated Jews. So the fact that he was, like, sitting having a civil conversation with her was shocking. Mm-hmm. The fact that she was a woman and he was talking to her, that was even worse in that society, right? And so Jesus wasn't worried that people were going to think different things about him, right? I mean, his whole purpose mm-hmm. was to, like, mess up everything that people believed in. You know, his 3 years of ministry, he just flipped everything on its head. He was not what people expected him to be. He went in the face of all that people had held on to the old covenant, right? He continued to do things that the Pharisees and the Sadducees said that he shouldn't, because he wanted to disrupt culture. You know, and are we willing to continue to disrupt culture? Because oftentimes, sadly, it's more of the world that is actually speaking louder for the equal rights of people than it happens in the church. And that shouldn't be. We should be leaders in what's happening with equality. And I'm not saying the church doesn't speak up and the church doesn't do good things. But in areas like this, we should be at the forefront of those movements. right? And I think that a lot of times with women, that's where we're not. And there are some denominations that are, and they are more vocal. So I'm not saying as a whole, but there's always been divides. So, you know, you have the civil rights movement. And so you know, during the 1960s, there were a lot of Christians that were at the forefront of that, right? And Martin Luther King was a Christian. But then you had other people that were using the Bible to defend why black people shouldn't be at the same level as them. We've had people as Christians who are using the Bible to keep slaves in their place, right? And so there's always been people that are going to use the Bible however they want to benefit their own agendas. So we need to be at the forefront of challenging that, right? And to continuing to push that forward. So just food for thought. I like this quote. It says, Jesus cared about reaching women. The Gospels include examples of Jesus healing and forgiving women who were ritually unclean, were Gentiles, were sinners, and had lost everything. He never rebuked them for acting like women, and he never made fun of them or purposely avoided them. Which is awesome. He bent social mores, so what was socially acceptable. It was highly unusual that any sort of religious or philosophical teacher would allow women to follow him and learn from him. You know, this is exactly what Jesus did. And again, I already said that they were providing for them, the other disciples, out of their own means. Jesus befriended women. Mary and Martha and Lazarus were his dear friends. Like, they were his friends. He cared about them. When they were hurting, he was hurting. They weren't blood relatives. It wasn't that he had this responsibility as a man in their family to protect them and provide for them. He was friends with them. He cared deeply for them. He went to their home. And it wasn't just Lazarus. He was willing to sit with them, to talk with them, and to know them. I wanted to read this. So Jesus not only overturned the social institutions of his time in the way he treated women, but also in the way he treated children, the poor, and the disabled. His association with what the leaders of Jesus' day considered to be beneath them reversed the separation, division, and prideful hierarchy caused by sin. As Paul will later write to the Galatians, there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is no male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And if you are Christ, then you are Abraham's offspring, heirs according to promise. So that's in Galatians. Jesus, and I want to go to where it was, when he talks with, where is it? Sorry, highlighted, but apparently not everything I needed. There's a woman, I wanted to read where it came from. Ew. Okay, I will find it as we go through, but some of the women that he interacts with, one of them he calls her daughter. There's another one that he says, you're a daughter of Abraham. And during this time, men were sons of Abraham, but never had women be called daughters of Abraham. So the men were honored to be in the, you know, to be part of Abraham's family because it was the head of the family that was honored, right? And so for him to say, you are a daughter of Abraham, pissed off a lot of people because that wasn't a saying that was used. And I can't remember the exact situation, and I'll find it as I flip through these. In Luke 8:39, when there's a woman who was caught in adultery, the Pharisees, when he talks with her and he sets her free, says, if this man were a prophet, he would know who and what sort of woman this was who was touching him, that she's a sinner. So if he really knew who she was, he wouldn't be doing this, right? And it's the opposite. He knew exactly who she was, and that's exactly why he was doing it. But they couldn't see that, because value and worth for people that they didn't deem valuable made no sense to them. It wasn't worth their time. And you see the Pharisees, they didn't care about people who were poor, right? They cared about how they looked. They cared about prominent people following them, respecting them, keeping their image, keeping the church together, keeping everything in this tight little box, because that's what they had for so long, and they wanted to maintain that. Let's see. Oh, here, okay. So the expression, the son of Abraham, was often used to indicate that a male Jew was recognized as bound by covenant to God. Women had never been called daughters of Abraham. With this title, Jesus recognizes this woman as having equal worth, and this is a woman who had been crippled for 18 years. When he laid his hands on her in the temple, saying, "Woman, you're set free of your infirmity," they became indignant that he had healed a woman on the Sabbath and that he had said, "Daughter of Abraham." With this title, Jesus recognizes this woman as having equal worth. In John 4, Jesus ignores two codes of behavior. He initiates a conversation with a foreigner, Samaritan. In addition, this foreigner was also a woman. Her surprise is included in the narrative. "How can you, a Jew, ask me a woman for a drink?" So, anyway, a few different stories in that, but the way that he honored in those interactions. Let's see. I wanted to go over a few of these and then give us a chance to process. When there was a flow of blood, and then there was that woman that had been bleeding for 12 years, so the fact that he didn't rebuke her or become unclean himself or need to go and perform all these rituals, he was saying, like, she is not unclean just because of that, right? In this condition, women were not allowed to participate in most religious rituals when they were bleeding, and she'd been bleeding for 12 years, so, I mean, think about, gosh, how she wasn't even allowed to be a part of really, I mean, society. Because there was never a time that she wasn't bleeding. So for 12 years, she couldn't be a part of the Jewish ceremonies and the rituals that were part of her culture. For 12 years, right? Because she kept bleeding.
Actually, she could have been stoned.
Right.
For being in the crowd, let alone touching.
Yeah. And the fact that he spared her life and the adulteress, her life as well. And he recognizes the dignity of women in situations that seem by ritual law to demand judgment, like we were saying. The sinful woman who anoints Jesus, the woman caught in adultery. So over and over again. Third, Jesus steps over expected boundaries between men and women by his acceptance of women as disciples. And then when you have... So for women to be in some of the Hebrew and spiritual rituals, there had to be 10 men there. And if there weren't 10 men, you couldn't have a gathering. And so it was based upon how many men were there. And oftentimes the women were not allowed to pray with the men, right, and go in different places. They were on different sides. And so at Pentecost, the women were joining the apostles in prayer. And so as Christianity is taking over and people are flocking to it, you start to see how Paul talks about women, different things that happen throughout the New Testament of placing women in different positions, right? And so Jesus begins it and highlights it, and then it's carried on by his disciples. So anyway, I know that's really fast, a big snapshot of a lot of different things, but I think it's important. I think, you know, what an awesome day, you know, as I was, you know, flipping through, but to be International Women's Day, like, really cool to honor women, and how amazing it is that women, like, just to go back, and I didn't realize that, but that two women, had they not done what they did and the courage that they had, the line for David, which led to Jesus, would have ended. Like, that's crazy, right? And it would have, like, totally messed up tons of prophecies, you know? And I'm not saying, like, what God has created is, like, on this, like, thin white, oh my gosh, I really hope. But he's, like, he empowered women to do that. Mm-hmm. It could have been men. Mm-hmm. It could have been a man that, like, decided to hide, you know, that young boy that was going to be killed, you know? But it was a woman, and her story was told, right? And it was Rahab. Well, somebody else could have been part of that story to hide, but no, God chose to use a woman who was a prostitute to say you have value and you have worth. And she is talked about like five different times throughout the Bible, you know, as a woman of faith. She didn't know Jesus, right? But she knew that there was a God and she had faith in him, and she becomes a woman of faith, right? In these interactions. So it's sad to me that churches that have women in ministry, in pastoral positions, is often looked at as sacrilegious and looked at as like that's so secularist, you know, like it's so outside of God, and yet it's not. and over again, there are women in these positions. Now, Jesus had 12 disciples. Yeah, and there's, like, the people that are closest to him, and he had three, like, brothers that are closest to him. But he had other women that he was super close to. But that's also to honor and respect those women, right? And so to have them with him and them falling asleep on his chest could destroy their lives, you know? So there was still an honor and respect for them, knowing what could happen to them, you know, if he's just spending time with them, like, you know, like, I'm just going to have 12 women and we're going to go late into the night and have a dinner, just us, right? I mean, it could discredit them. A lot of these women are married. And so to honor them, to honor their families, to, like, he was just talking to them, but he wasn't going to bring them into that inner circle. I'm just going to spend time with you. It doesn't mean he didn't value them, but because of that, he wanted to honor and respect and protect boundaries.
And there's still women in the Bible that we didn't mention. Think about the lady that gave what she had, the two coins. Yeah. I mean, she would be remembered always.
Mm-hmm. Always, yeah, yeah. And so many, so many stories.
Yeah.
So many Marys. There's a lot of Marys in the Bible. Mm-hmm. I was like, a lot of Marys. And a lot of them came from really, like, hard backgrounds. You know, Mary Magdalene had, like, 6-7 spirits that were cast out of her. And it was interesting, as I was reading, a lot of times. I'm going to try that one more time. A lot of times.
What's that?
A lot of these Marys have all become Mary Magdalene, and yet they are different stories. And so people have thought that Mary Magdalene was an adulteress. That's not her story, you know? So she had, like, spirits that were cast out from her, but that's not her story. And so her following Jesus was different. It's not the prostitute. Anyway, yeah. Sometimes, like, we have these stories that kind of overlap, like, well, I'm not sure. Maybe that's this person. Maybe that's this person. But if you look a little bit deeper as people have unpacked that, which is new information for me too, because you hear people's teachings on things and you just start to think that you know these people and you're like, oh, you didn't do that. So in society, like I had said, we need to be willing to disrupt culture. And we need to be willing to challenge what the church as a whole does in honor, you know, like, excuse me, not just attacking things, but to challenge things and to allow things to be different than we have held on to. Because what we do, I mean, I think that there's a lot of things that, like, we do and we hold on to that Jesus would be like, what are you doing? How is that love? Like, where did you get that? But we've adopted things that people have pulled out of context to create a church culture that really pushes people down. We say that we want to help people. And when I say we, I'm saying the church as a whole around the world. But it continues to be a battle for power, right? You have here in America too, but you've got these pastors in Uganda, and they're these prophets, you know, asking for money and having this celebrity and having people. Centipedes? Oh, there is. I'll just move this up here. Okay. No, that's good. That's creepy. I don't want that in my bag. Okay. I'm back. And we all lived from the centipede. There's a centipede in the jungles that's 2 feet long.
Is that a millipede or is it
equal? They called it a centipede, but
you can't sleep and you feel so
we almost died by a centipede. This was only 2 inches, but we almost died by a centipede. So it almost felt like we were in the jungle, but we're not. Okay. But are we willing to disrupt the culture that has been held for so long, right? There are things that have been adopted in Western Christian life that is not how the early fathers of the faith believed. It's not how they lived. It's not how they structured things. And organizations that have tried to understand biblical manhood and womanhood, I believe, continues to push women down and elevate men above. And they take certain scriptures out of context without really understanding the historical and cultural context that's happening. And yet, a lot of those people, and I've heard these teachings by places, they're like, we need to make sure that we are understanding the cultural and historical context. And then the things that they teach, I'm like, and yet you're not. You know, like, these women, like Lydia, like, they're women who had churches in their homes. They were seen as the pastors of their church. And yet, because somebody doesn't believe that women should be equality, right, equal, then they are going to change that and shift that and say, like, that's not what those words meant. Well, there's a woman, like, in Scripture, it says that she was a deacon. So how are churches saying that women are not allowed to be deacons when it says there? Because they're going to figure out how to change and shift that, right? I mean, people will do things where, like, oh, maybe that wasn't actually a woman, that was a man, but it was, like, translated wrong. You know, like, there's things that people will put in to twist for their own benefit, which is exactly what slave owners did, right? Like, one scripture that says, slaves, obey your masters. That's, Jesus wasn't saying slavery was good. He was saying, don't become a hateful, hurtful person and just cause damage to other people. Right? And yet there's so many situations where he's saying, like, we're not, it's not about a slave master and a slave, like, slave person, somebody in slavery, a slave. That's easier to say that. Gosh, I'm struggling here. This time change is struggle. And all the centipedes are coming out. This is getting dangerous. Okay. This is getting really hard. What was I saying? Somebody help me.
Slave person.
Gosh. People in slavery, like, things have been taken out of context throughout history and been used to hurt other people.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Over and over again.
I think, so, you talk about a culture, right?
Yeah.
And people can look at the historical context, like, what was the culture like? If you forget that he rubbed the culture wrong and you stop at what the culture dictated, you're missing the part where he says, like, I am not okay. I'm not going to allow culture to tell me whose value is what. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And then he touched, like you said, he touched lepers, touched women. He protected lepers. He protected women.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's value was raised up.
Yeah.
But so I'm just saying culture. Like, people will, like, go, well, what was culture like for the Jewish people? I said, yeah, and also Jesus, like, kind of rubbed it wrong.
Right.
Like, if you stop at what culture looked like, you haven't gone far enough.
Right. And yeah, he had to be careful. How much was he going to disrupt culture? Right? To what extent in that time? I mean, he was a strategist. Like, I mean, he knew exactly what. He knew he had 3 years of ministry, and he wasn't supposed to die before then. You know? So it's like, to disrupt, to push things, and these are only some of the stories that are written. There's so much more. I mean, throughout his life, 33 years, he had many interactions with women. This is 3 years and a few stories, right, that we have to go off of. But had he just, like, gotten up and just said, like, you know, tried to change everything, tried to be this revolutionary and lead, like, you know, he would have been destroyed earlier. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There was a reason for things being done a certain way, and to model for his disciples how to honor so that they could continue that on. And it was all through, like, I'm just going to love people. And a big thing that people continue to hold on to was the old covenant, right? And especially, like, with women being unclean. All of that stuff was a part of the old covenant. And Jesus continued to do things. He would heal on the Sabbath. Well, you're not supposed to do anything on the Sabbath, let alone heal somebody. And then heal somebody who's bleeding and allow her to touch you. Like, you've just messed up so many of the, of the laws. Mm-hmm. You are so unclean now, and yet people continue to follow him, and he was known as a rabbi in people's lives, right? He was a leader. He was a master that they followed. So he was saying throughout these things in subtle ways, that old covenant's dead. It's about love. And we know that that commandment that he left with them, love your neighbor as yourself. But then he demonstrated it. It wasn't just through words, right? And so as a church, as a whole, we can say that everybody is valuable, but are we willing to actually model that everybody is valuable,
yeah,
right? And a big thing that was happening during this time was cultural things that were different or sin patterns that people had. Well, what we're dealing with in our nation now looks very different than that. So we're like, I don't know what to do because it's not spoken of in the Bible. Well, he said to love people, so I'm pretty sure that that was spoken of in the Bible. So, like,
let's
do it. Like, you know, that a specific people group may not be referenced in the Bible doesn't mean that they're not included in love everyone. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And so I love like sitting and really looking at what Jesus did and how he treated people, because he really is the measure of what do you say, like
the standard
for perfect humanity,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when it works at its best,
yeah, mm-hmm,
we look like Jesus,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When it's at its worst, I think we look like Pharisees,
yeah,
you know? Not that we look like sinners and drunks. I think we look like Pharisees when it's at its worst, humanity.
Mm-hmm.
When we judge other people,
mm-hmm,
and we continue to push people lower than who we are, we're Pharisees. Like that's the worst version. Because who did he continue to attack? Who? Huh? Yeah. You were going to say it. You say it. Yeah,
no.
Your words. I just keep talking. Yes. The Pharisees, those are the ones that he spoke to, right? In such a bold, blunt way. And so as we continue to move forward, we can't say that the church right now is the standard for how to live. It should be. It should be the standard for how to treat people. But it's not. You look at the woman that you were talking about who gave everything, and that is a beautiful story.
Yeah.
But that is often then taken and applied to people who have nothing that you should give everything. There was an article that popped up that Dave Ramsey was saying, churches, and Dave, I don't know if you know Dave Ramsey, but Peace University, Financial Peace University, he's helped a lot of people get out of debt. He's also a Christian. He has talk radio, you know, that he helps people. But one of the things he said, churches, stop asking people who are going further and further into debt and are in poverty to tithe. Stop doing that. Give them the tools so that they can actually get out of poverty. And then they have something to give. But if you could, like, and because people keep preaching, like, give out of faith, give out of faith. That woman, she gave her last coins. Well, that's a beautiful story. That's not everyone's story. That has to be led through God and the Holy Spirit, right? And so we make these things as a standard for this is how we should do it. Oh, give your last and you're going to get a blessing. Give your last. And that's what's happening in Uganda. Like, these people who have nothing left are bringing their last because God's going to give you a bigger blessing if you give everything you have. And they go home. And guess what the church isn't doing is giving to those people so they have something to eat. They're going home hungry and they're waiting for God to bless them. And then they think, oh, God must not love me because he didn't bless me and give me what I gave. Now, I've had moments where God's like, hey, you only have a little bit. Like, give to this person. And the next day, somebody gave something to me. Like, that's happened. Like, somebody came up to me, and I had just given something to somebody else and came up to me like, hey, I just had this in my wallet, and, like, I'm give this to you. And it was an amount for a ticket that I needed to a concert, you know? And I had given something earlier to somebody else. Like, God leads us in things, absolutely. We can't make these things as standards, right, that we follow. And so are we willing to disrupt culture? And it's really frightening for people. And Aaron and I have been talking about this, and people are afraid of things changing, you know? To go away from women's rights right now, but like to look at race right now, right? So we have white supremacists.
Yeah.
It looks like power, right? And pride. But I really believe that at the root of it, it's fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's fear that I'm going to lose who I am. I'm going to lose my identity. And I think it's the same thing with men and women. If I let go of this power, who am I? What do I have left? Because this has become my identity. I know who I am if I'm here. But if I'm here with you, I don't know how to behave. And I feel like what's going to happen is then you're going to then usurp power and you're going to become above me, and I don't know what would happen to me. I'm going to lose myself. And I think it comes to fear. If we're willing to disrupt culture, you're going to have people that are afraid of it because they are not solid in who they are. And I think that's a big thing with white supremacists. If you really knew who you were, if you were really connected and solid in your culture, and you really, like, it was actual pride and just, like, who you were as a person, and you were, like, were confident, you wouldn't be worried that there are other people who are different from you around you. How can that steal your culture and your identity? Because how can that change who you are if that's something that who you are? Does that make sense? And so this thing of power, I think, really comes from a place of fear. And the same thing in the church. It's going to be a mess if we do it a different way. This is how we know how to do it, and this is what works. Well, first of all, no, it doesn't work, but it's fear to let go of some of that power. So just in disrupting culture, in looking at Jesus, and when people share with you, or you're sharing, you know, with them about the Bible, a lot of people will bring up things, you know, that God was horrible and mean, and he hated women. Look how women are, you know, treated, and look at the different things that happen. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait a minute. Not everything that happened to a woman in the Bible is because of God. It's part of the history that's being told. Don't say that that's at his hands, right? Yeah. Not everything that took place is because he wanted it to happen, right? Just because that scripture doesn't mean that he wanted slavery. He was helping people to see, like, in whatever situation you're in, you can still have honor and respect for people. Mm-hmm. You can choose that. And some people even believe that mm-hmm. what that context was a bondservant. Somebody who said, hey, I'm going to serve you for my life. It was not somebody that was snatched away from their parents and made to be a slave. They had said, I'm going to serve you. So do it with honor and respect if you know, choosing that. That's what I've heard some people teach on.
I think a lot of that has to do with the witness that we can bear to those that are our oppressors. Like God mm-hmm. says, love your enemy. Mm-hmm. Right? And so there's places where Paul's in prison and he is sharing the love of God with those that have imprisoned him. And there are accounts where guards mm-hmm. come to know Christ. Mm-hmm. And there are accounts outside after the Bible where guards, like when Christians have gone to be executed, would kneel down and be executed with the prisoners mm-hmm. because they've come to know the love of God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Through what? Loving your enemy. The person who is beating you. The person mm-hmm. who has put you in chains for your faith. You know, there's power in love. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're called mm-hmm. to, like, love people, you know, from God's perspective.
A love that is reckless, like we were talking about that song.
That's reckless.
It feels reckless. It doesn't make sense, mm-hmm. and it does put us into danger. You know, and you look at some of these women, and what they did was reckless. Mm-hmm. If you were really concerned about your own life, you wouldn't have tried to snatch that kid and, like, hide him. You know, you wouldn't have done these things mm-hmm. to protect these lineages. You wouldn't have dressed up like a prostitute and went and slept with your father-in-law. You know, like, it's reckless behavior, right? And so what we do doesn't always, I'm not saying dress up like a prostitute and go try to sleep with your father-in-law. Let's back up. I'm not saying that's for everybody. Because that's yeah.
That's an option, I guess.
That's apparently.
Seek some wise counsel.
That message is for a different time. So, in disrupting things, are we willing to step back and actually look at why do we do the things that we do? Why is the church holding so firmly to things, and what's really true in it, and what's not? And what have we just done forever, right? Or what do we do out of fear? And how do we, challenge things and make it better for people to actually be seen and feel loved in the communities that we're inviting them into? And there are going to be people that are going to continue to do things in the name of Jesus that are going to hurt people. You know, and so, but if they're the loudest and we're not speaking up as well, you know, and that's a problem. And so this is a challenge for me as well. I'm not, you know, I'm saying I'm always the best at disrupting culture, but I want to be open to things that have been done that shouldn't be done anymore, you know, and being willing. Like, we grew up, we grew up in the vineyard, and I don't believe that they had a stance against
Mm-mm.
women pastors
Mm-mm.
or any of that. And so
some people within the vineyard do. But
yeah,
but
the vineyard
that.
As a whole organization.
Right, no.
Yeah. But still, you get those flavors in there. Like, you kind of grow up. And a lot of times, I mean, you often see men running churches,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's usually who is running churches. And so when you're not represented or you don't see that that's possible, then there might be something that God's calling somebody into. You're like, but well, I guess I can't because I don't see that happening. Or when that does happen, then something is talked bad about that person, or they're ripped apart for what they're doing, right? And so it's like, well, I don't want to put myself out there and, like, invite all that hate. You know, like, it can mess with people. And I think, you know, throughout history, just in our own country, when we started being, you know, when kids started seeing women scientists represented in media and in TV shows, little girls are like...
The coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah, I can be a scientist. You had the woman in Star Trek. I can't remember her name.
Uhura?
Yeah, Uhura. Like, she changed the face of science and STEM for girls, and especially girls of color, because they're like, whoa, they'd never seen, you know, a woman who's black being a scientist and being one of the smartest ones on the ship, right? Mm. And so it disrupts culture, and sometimes it takes time. We still have a lot of growth to be made. But when people challenge things, when you do it out of hatred, you're going to be silenced.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing that people need to learn. You know, Westboro Baptists, who I'm going to just say I do not believe are Christians, but they speak as other Christians, they do nothing out of love, right? It's all out of hate. And who listens to them? Nobody, right? Like, people don't listen to them. They don't have a growing, flourishing, you know, place, except for people who love, like, to be angered on things and latch onto that. But, you know, you look at Martin Luther King, you look at the civil rights movement, and the way that it was done was still out of, like, it was peaceful protest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the people that did violent protest, that actually didn't change things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They were silenced and hated for what they were doing. And you have churches that will attack other churches, right? And be like, ugh, I'm against you. Or like, we're against you, and so we're going to do this. That doesn't change someone's heart. It's really through relationship. And the way that Jesus did things, it's not that he stood up and said, hey, I'm going to change all of these things, and we're doing that now. Come follow me. He did it bit by bit. And he challenged things in conversations, and he said things, and he offended this person,
mm-hmm.
and he offended that person, you know, and he loved this person, and he loved this person, and it changed culture, and it shifted things. And so, you know, there are mass things, and I'm not saying, like, mm-hmm. against that, but the way that we do it and what heart we do it, there's been times throughout growing up, me and my family, things that were just like, ugh, I hate the church, I'm done. Ugh, you know, just like anger, and when you, like, because people were being hurt, and just the way that it was being done, it just felt unhealthy, you know? And there's so many times we're like, I'm out! I'm done! You know, like, that doesn't change anything. And it's about loving people. And Jesus, the way that Jesus even spoke to the Pharisees, he still loved them. Because Jesus was love, right? And so
mm-hmm.
everything he did, everything he communicated was still out of love. He didn't say, I hate you. You know? He rebuked them. He corrected them, but he still did it out of love. So, anyway, all that being said, women, I'm really glad that you're in my life. Thanks for being awesome. Like, I have no idea, like, where I'd be. Like, my mom is, like, one of my, you know, biggest spiritual mentors in my life. Like, I wouldn't know what I know without being able to watch the relationship, you know, that she has had with God, and the truth that she's been able to bring, and the confidence, you know, that she holds. And so... there's so many, you know, women that I look up to in amazing ways. And so as a man, to you women, I'm sorry that the church has not been supportive of women, and that it's hard in the past to see that. And if there are ways that we are doing things that don't feel good, I'm open for you to challenge that, because there might be things that we do that are just kind of are happening, and it might not have any motivation what you think it is, but or just something that's just done. Does that make sense? Like, feel free to challenge things, to talk about things and say, like, hey, you said this, like, why? Or it may not have even to do with gender, but just, like, things that we do to be like, where are you getting this from? Like, why do you believe that? Why do you speak about that? I am very willing to look at things and be like, hey, you know, or to say, like, I'm not really sure. I'm going to wrestle with that. You know, I don't know where I am in that situation. I don't know where I am on this topic right now. You know, and it's not that my faith is wishy-washy. It's that I know that I've grown up in a society that elevates white men above most others, right? That's how America is. It's founded by white men for white men, you know? And so being a white man, I don't sometimes see the impact that it's having on people that are unlike me, you know? And so as a church, we need to be willing to push some of these things and be like, hey, why do we do that? You know, do you have a firm stance on this? Like, what do you believe about this? And I want to have those discussions and that dialogue, because it's important for us to be able to look at things and be like, what are some sacred cows, you know, that we're holding on to that is not God? You know, what are, I mean, even the idea going back to tithe, you know, tithing is an old covenant act, and that people say you must tithe 10%, you must tithe 10%. An offering comes out of a place of love and giving and being a part. An offering is important. There is blessing that comes from giving. But a mandatory 10% that churches use, that is not biblical. That's part of the old covenant. We are not under that. We're not under laws and regulations. And so that's something that I didn't know until I had somebody like open that up for me. You know, this is a big Bible that I'm not a master of, but I'm learning and growing in. And as a community, we're going to continue to learn. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And grow together. So anyway, women, I honor you. Like, I'm really excited you're here, and you're needed. And what you carry and who you are, the gifts and talents that you have, and women out there who are listening to this, and women that you know, like, God is about elevating all of us to be the best us. There is not hierarchy. Are there differences? Am I going to come to things differently than my mom does? Yeah, absolutely. Our experiences, you know, our how we're made, how we're created, we're going to have a different perspective on things. So difference, yes. Unequal, no. So I just want to pray. God, I pray for you to give us strength, even as a small community, God, that we would be willing to push the envelope, to challenge what has been held onto by the church, and to have conversations, to help people to see clearly those that have been repelled by the church because of the ways that Christians have lorded it over people, or pushed certain groups down in your name, that doesn't follow your heart, God, that you would bring restoration. And I just pray for restoration in your body as a whole, restoration, continued restoration in our community, God, in our body, and the people that we're connected with, and that we'd be willing to have tough conversations. We'd be willing to wrestle with things. We'd be willing to say, like, why do I do that? Why is this behavior a part of our traditions, our community, and our culture? God, thank you for the women in my life. God, thank you that you have blessed me with amazing women that I look up to and I respect highly, women that have challenged me and helped me grow into who I am. God, thank you for the different perspectives that we have when we all come together from our different backgrounds, and we're able to look at you, feast our eyes on you, and see different aspects of you that we can help each other understand. God, I thank you that you didn't create us all exactly the same, but in your eyes, we are all equal. You love us 100% exactly where we are. You can't love us more, and you can't love us less. And God, I just pray that as women continue to speak up, God, that men would speak up alongside them, that it wouldn't just be them trying to fight for what you have provided for them, but it would be men that are saying things have to change. And I know that's already happening, God, but I just pray for more confidence and courage. And I just speak against fear. The way that religious institutions are holding on to dogma and rituals God, out of fear of change, because they don't know what's going to be left. If they start to look at things, if they start to analyze things, what are they going to have left to actually hold on to? God, we have you to hold on to. You are our standard. Jesus, you are our guide. You are the way, the truth, and the life. And we need to look at you and how you treated people, how you elevated people, and how you loved people. And if everything else has to come down and crash and burn in some ways, God, we still have you to hold on to be able to build what's actually good in the midst of things that aren't of you. So God, I love you, and I thank you for who you are and how you continue to help us to grow and understand you more and more. Mm-hmm. Each day.